Hey everyone, you're listening to Affirmative Reaction here on SiriusXM Progress Channel 127. I'm your host, Jorge Andres Olivares. Now, my next guest is somebody who I always love to be able to have a chance to speak with for a variety of topics. Now, Frederick Joseph has been on my show at least three or four times now, talking about politics, talking about culture, talking about all sorts of things in which his voice is very much a necessary voice to be able to talk about these things. But this particular chat we're about to have is very unique and very special because it's about Frederick's new book. It's called The Black Friend on Being a Better White Person. And the idea of the book is just kind of like what the subtitle says. It is allowing white people and people who are not of a colored experience, a people of color experience, to understand not only what we've had to go through as people of color for not only the past generations, but in this particular moment, but how they can best learn from us and learn from the people who they encounter in their lives on a daily basis, those of us who they consider to be their friends. And so Frederick is offering to be that Black friend to help you figure out ways in which you can be a better ally. And so excited to welcome writer, activist, and philanthropist Frederick Joseph to the show to talk about ways in which we can better serve one another and to be the kind of people that we were meant to be in this world. So Frederick, thank you so much for joining me today.
Jorge, I appreciate being here. And I'm mad you didn't include one huge thing about the book.
I was going to talk about it, right? So full disclosure to our listeners, I am included in the book. A conversation that I had with Frederick earlier this year is included, and I've told him many times how grateful and humbled I am to be included. And so first off, thank you for that. This is my first time being able to tell you in person, because obviously the pandemic has come in the way. But thank you for one, joining me on the show, and also two, for allowing me to be a part of this this really great journey you're on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one, it's my pleasure. Someone asked me the other day how I chose the people to be in the book. And frankly, you know, I love your voice. Like, I just love the way that you view the world. Having listened to your show for quite some time, even, you know, before we had met and things of that nature, I think it's the perfect voice to try to, you know, platform further in my writing for young people. So, you know, thank you. And here's to us, you know, hopefully changing some hearts and lives.
I love that. I before we get into the book, I do want to ask first off, since this is the first time you and I are chatting, we talked earlier this year when you were doing the rent relief project on Twitter, when COVID first hit and when people were saying how difficult it was for them to be able to sustain themselves, because obviously this has been such a weird, unprecedented moment. But let's just talk about how you personally are. I know you yourself you also contracted the virus the same way I did early on and have had to deal with some of the repercussions of that. So just first off, just how are you and how have things been?
You know, I'm okay. When I had the virus, I was asymptomatic. So I never knew. So I still don't know when I had it. But after the fact, you know, I started having some weird symptoms, over the summer. Like, I mean, like tired would be an understatement. Like pure exhaustion. Like I would be in the kitchen cooking something and couldn't stand. I would just, you know, I have to go like lay down and, or, you know, I was having, issues with my neck and just all sorts of things were happening to me. And I was getting tested multiple times, like, do I have COVID? Do I have COVID? They're like, no, you don't have COVID. And eventually we did an antibody test after weeks and weeks of feeling this way. After we thought that I might've had meningitis, they did a freaking spinal tap on me. and you know, they found that I had the antibodies. So they're like, hey, at some point it seems that you had this and you're now dealing with what we refer to as a post-COVID syndrome, you know, which was hell. It hospitalized me twice, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want people to know if you haven't followed Frederick on social media or don't quite know what Frederick looks like, you're an incredibly fit person. You're somebody like when you talk about at least the social narrative around COVID and who can get it and who can't get it or who's affected by it and who's not. like somebody who works out as often as you do, somebody who's in tip-top shape, somebody who's very young, that this is happening and that this has been something that you've had to deal with for at least for two times to have to go to the hospital for.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's an important point. And I think I said it on Twitter once that, you know, I'm about 6'3", like 240 pounds. And I work out like constantly, like about 5 or 6 times a week. And it didn't matter, right? Like my body just shut down. And I mean, again, I'm someone who's high energy all the time. You know, I'm used to going and going, and it shut me down. Like, you know, we act as if this is only impacting, you know, people who are, you know, of old age or people who, you know, are out of shape. And it's kind of gaslighting, really, that's being done, because like you said, I don't fit any of that. This based on the false narratives, this shouldn't have impacted me.
Now, it's been interesting because in the course of the past few months, I've probably been the most crucial with regards to putting this book together. So for our listeners, as I mentioned, when we did have a conversation for what's included in the book for the particular chapter that I'm noted in, that conversation happened before quarantine, before all of this craziness happened. But I'm assuming that a big portion of the compilation of it and now the promotion of it is being done at home in ways that you probably didn't foresee.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing most of the promotion of the book for the book on Twitter and Instagram, really. You know, it's interesting. I get a lot of media historically for things that I do, you know, Rent Relief and Black Panther Challenge. Yeah, Captain Marvel Challenge and all that. But asking people to kind of like give me the ability to come talk about my book has been, you know, very difficult. You know, people are, you know, not necessarily receptive. And I think part of it is the nature of what the book's about, right? Like a book that is holding white people accountable, having serious conversations for white people of different ages. You know, people are not here for it, even though we just came out of this major moment over the summer, you know, with the George Floyd and Breonna Taylor protests, you know, Rayshard Brooks and all the people we lost. Yeah, it's still hard to promote.
I'm glad that you're making this point, because I think something that needs to be said, and the reasons why I've had Frederick on the show, one, because he's an awesome person, but two, because of a lot of the things that you've incorporated yourself into, first launching the Black Panther Challenge a couple years ago. And I do want to talk about that later on in our conversation today. But like a lot of the things that you've had a chance to work on have not centered you, that you've allowed it to be bigger than you. And the book is something that's bigger than you. And I'm wondering why people can't make that correlation, because this conversation is a conversation that a lot of people are having on a day-to-day basis. And you're honestly just trying to be a facilitator. You're trying to make that conversation easier. And so it really does, because the book, it's different. It's several different conversations. On the back of the book, it lists all the different people you've had a chance to talk to. Our good friend Jamira Burley is included in this. As I mentioned myself, April Rain, who we know from Oscar So White and the campaign surrounding that. And so it really has become about several voices trying to unite together to better inform those who might've been closed off to it to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's interesting. I was having this conversation with my fiance earlier. So there's various books out about race, and I tell everyone, not everyone is best served talking about race, even if you're Black or Latinx, so on and so forth. And we as a society make that common misconception, which is also inherently rooted in racism and tokenism, right? You know, I don't know the name of the book, but there's a book out right now that's like doing really well, and by another Black person. But in that book, the person whose book it is was like sitting down and meeting with the police, you know, and like, you know, this is after George Floyd protests, or maybe during that period of time. And, you know, that book, I read it actually, and I do know the name, I'm just not going to say it, but I read it the other day, and I'm just like, oh, this is inherently not who I am. I am much more, I don't even call it radical. I'm much more like, no, white people, you're getting this wrong, right? And like, and I think white people are leaning into feeling comfortable right now, right? As opposed to feeling uncomfortable, because the conversations that we're having in the book, so for people who don't have the book yet, the way the book is structured is, it's my personal experiences, my personal writing. And then in each chapter, I kind of affirm the whatever I'm talking about with a conversation with someone about that topic. So, you know, if I'm talking about, you know, doing things to Black people, such as touching hair, you know, I might then talk to Angie Thomas about her experiences in that, so that it's not just me saying, oh, white people, you're getting it wrong. It's like, no, we all have like kind of a shared experience in oppression. That is a very different experience of a read and of accountability than someone saying like, oh, well, you know, white people, we know that you're afraid too. And we, you know, that's never going to be me. And I think that that's just a much easier sell. And I can kind of see where the issue is right now, as far as who's being platformed, if any of that makes sense.
No, it absolutely makes sense. I think we as a society have become so fickle with who we like our messengers to be and what we want them to look like and the particular way in which that message is put across. And I just find that fascinating. Like, there are people out there who have incredible things to say, but because there's a superficiality aspect to it, people just close themselves off to it without even hearing what needs to be said. I do want to talk about this idea, because I love that the title in and of itself is The Black Friend, because so many, I mean, there have been a lot of jokes about the fact that white people just get yourself a black friend, or most white people only have one black friend, that they use that black friend to kind of justify their ways in which they either ally or don't ally. So let's talk about just arriving at that being your title and kind of embracing this idea that for some, you might be their only black friend now.
I mean, you know, and I think that's an important point I say in the book, you know, like, not every black person, not every Latinx person, so on and so forth, has to do the work, right? Like, somebody can say, like, just because I chose to say, like, hey, I'm going to be this person who's black and tries to help you get it right, doesn't mean that you should expect every person who's black to do that, right? But for those who don't have anybody in your life, or frankly, those who have black people in your life telling them things that are problematic, because that exists too. I'm trying to get you to go the right direction. You know, it's like I said earlier on Twitter, you know, just because someone's black doesn't mean that their experience speaks for the community. You know, whether it's the Republicans using Candace Owens or the Democrats using Barack Obama, right? Like, yeah, Barack Obama said he doesn't agree with the slogan defund the police. I don't agree with Barack Obama, and that's fine, right? That's tokenization to inherently feel like, oh, well, this black person said this thing, and therefore, right? So in this book, again, that's why I didn't want it to just be my voice. Like, I could have just written a book myself and whatever. I was like, I'm going to include some conversations, because I think that it's important that people say, like, oh, I don't necessarily agree with Fred, but I see where Jameer is coming from, and that's fine by me, right? Like, or I don't necessarily agree with Fred all the time, but I see where Jorge is coming from. And that's what I wanted. So it's like, I wanted to be the black person in your life, so that you don't have to expect other black people to be that black person in your life.
I think that's such a good point. This idea that yourself, myself, someone like Jameer Burley, who we said is also included in the book, like, we've made the choice to do this. We've made the choice to educate, inform, entertain to a variety of ways. And not everybody makes that choice just because of the color of their skin. Just because our identities have been politicized doesn't mean that everybody wants to be that political person out in the world. But it is something that we have made a conscious effort to do better at. I want to talk about some of the different chapters of the book. The first one I want to talk about is that certain things are racist, even if you don't know it. And I think that that's been something that we've had to tackle at least over the past year in the lead up to the election, where a lot of people just could not wrap their minds around the idea that they could be doing racist things and that it is like they just have to accept the fact that it is that. And they just are better off if they allow themselves to be have that pointed out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, every single chapter in the book is kind of like this leaning into microaggressions, right? Like, because like, you know, I think books like Stamped, books like How to Be an Anti-Racist are phenomenal. I think that, you know, Dr. Kendi and Jason Reynolds did a good job with that, great job with that. What I wanted to write was the conversations that we actually are not having ever, right? I didn't want to write about Jim Crow and slavery being bad because we, you know, not everybody agrees, but we know that, right? I wanted to write about the fact that, oh, like you were talking about your specific culture in our conversation, right? And how your culture doesn't inherently center whiteness like at all. And that should be fine because, you know, we have so much whiteness centered in what we have to deal with just being in America, right? Especially as you growing up on you know, in a border town, so on and so forth. And, you know, throughout the book, you know, that's what I'm aiming to accomplish is people understanding micro and macro aggressions. Like, oh, I didn't call him the N-word. Yeah, but you called him articulate, right? Like, you know, and, mm-hmm. and it might not be the N-word, but the N-word is not the only wrong thing that you can say to a Black person, right? Oh, well, like, I just assume that I've seen other people wear sombreros on Cinco de Mayo. Is it your culture? No, then it is a cultural appropriation, right? And I think those are the conversations that we need to now move into because we're like, oh my God, like, I didn't vote for Trump, therefore I'm not a bad white person. You could be a bad person and still have voted for Biden. That, you know, stamping this liberal thing of like, I don't have a Confederate flag and I don't have a Trump flag, therefore I must be getting it right, is not actually it.
Mm-hmm. So the particular chapter that I'm included in is, it kind of makes sense when you think about my name. It says, you can at least try to pronounce my name correctly. because people, I mean, if they are listening to the show, they understand that my name is spelled a particular way. It's spelled very ethnically. And I think that's something that obviously a lot of people who aren't of color just don't get about the difficulties that come with somebody, one, not trying to make an effort to say your name correctly, to already having all these different impressions about who you are because of how your name is spelled. And also I think it comes to not even just with the idea of names, but our images. Like, yeah. I feel like if people saw pictures of you and I and, you know, on social media or wherever it might be, that people might already have certain assumptions about the lives that we lead and the politics mm-hmm. that we have. And I think that's part of the education process is allowing people to deconstruct these stereotypes that they have about us just based off of how we look or our names. Because not doing so would be very detrimental to our progress.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. Again, we don't tackle those conversations enough. Like right now I'm in a hoodie, an Ollie hoodie and like a beanie. And one could make whatever assumption based on my stature, so on and so forth, obviously being Black. But the way I'm treated then, because of respectability politics, if I'm in a suit, is oftentimes completely different. And I think that even in communities that are non-white, we need to unpack and unlearn the fact that you should be treated the same regardless of what you're in, right? Like we have this maybe it's not just an era, but like it's inherently rooted in white supremacy that like generations have felt like, oh my God, well, you have to don't go out looking like that and don't go out wearing that and don't say this and don't say that. I'm like, we need to get our society to a point where you respect non-white people regardless of what they look like, what they're wearing, what they eat, so on and so forth. And there's not enough of those conversations happening. Like if I look at you, Jorge, I don't assume anything, right? I just want to know about you. Like, hey, let me learn. And that's what we need to actually be pushing.
Let's just briefly talk about Oppression Olympics. Because that's incorporated in one of the titles of the of a chapter in the book, which again is called The Black Friend. But what, for our listeners who are curious about what that means, what are the Oppression Olympics?
So Oppression Olympics, it's interesting. So basically, in society, there are multiple groups dealing with oppression. You have marginalized communities such as the LGBTQ plus community who are dealing with homophobia, transphobia, so on and so forth. You have the Black community that's dealing with white supremacy, general racism, so on and so forth, right? So for example, you can have somebody who's in the LGBTQ plus community who is dealing with oppression, but they're also still accessing their privilege in whiteness if they are white, right? So oftentimes it's conflated that because you belong to one community doesn't mean that you don't have the privilege or in a position to oppress another community. You know, it's like me as a cisgender heterosexual Black man, I have more privilege in our society than a trans Black woman, right? And if I say to a trans Black woman who needs support or help, like, well, I'm dealing with this as well, that's where the Olympics comes in, right? It becomes a competition as to who is more oppressed. But realistically, we're not actually dealing with the issues at hand. We're just basically running in circles, you know, arguing as to who's dealing with more.
Now, for listeners who are curious about everybody should really be the intended audience of this book, because there's so many different lessons that can be learned because everyone's lived experiences are so different. But there's something that's very specific about the reason why you wrote this book and the intended audience about who you wanted to be on the other end of this message.
Yeah, you know, for me, whenever I do anything, whether it's the rent relief campaign or Black Panther Challenge, whatever, it's always to fill a gap. You know, that's just my inherent personality. I don't want to create something that's already created. For what? Why not just amplify the person or people who created the thing already? What I saw was that in the space of kind of anti-racism conversations, things of that nature, a lot of books were academic, are academic. They're academic reflections or like firsthand experiences for an adult audience. I wanted to create something that is much more conversational, much more empathy building, and that's more inclusive age-wise, right? I said, like, there's no reason why I can't talk about experiences that emotionally and mentally impact a parent just as much as a child, right? So the ages that this book starts at are 12 years old. And again, throughout the book, I'm using much more of a conversational voice, right? Like, I can write in an academic way. There's aspects of the book that are far more academic when I get to those moments. But I wanted it to feel as if myself and the reader are sitting in a room just talking, right? Just talking these things through, or that they get the chance to listen to, like, you and I talk, right? It's like very much our conversation, me giving my own thoughts in certain moments where you are speaking about certain things, but it's like you get to be a fly on the wall. Like, what is this conversation about? What are they saying? What can I learn? Let me just shut up and just listen and be there. And I didn't think that existed.
Well, granted, I remember what our phone call was like, but in reading the other chapters, like, you really do feel like you're sitting in the room while you're having these chats with these people. And I think that's what makes the book all the more exciting and fascinating, is that it feels so inclusive in the best of ways, because you really do feel like you're included in a very important conversation that a lot of us need to have right now. So I just want to remind our listeners, again, the book is called The Black Friend, On Being a Better White Person. The author is Frederick Joseph. The book is out now, so be sure to pick it up. And I would venture to say that it's a perfect holiday gift, especially for those people in your life who you think would best be suited for it. But Frederick, thank you so much for chatting with me about this book.
Jorge, I appreciate you having me. And everyone, make sure you go to the chapter that Jorge is specifically in, because Jorge is absolutely brilliant. And I think that your specific experience and the intersection of your existence, you know, is something that everyone should let, you know, wash over them.
Thank you, buddy.